Blog Talk Radio.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. The White House is watching what is going on in Egypt very closely. Spokesman Robert Gibbs says for now it's Egypt's issue.
The government of Egypt will be is an issue for the people of Egypt.
But if there is one way to get somebody's attention, it's with money, and the Obama administration is threatening to reduce the $1.5 billion in foreign aid. It's promised Cairo unless President Hosni Mubarak changes the way his government is responding to street protesters.
Everywhere we went, people were desperate to tell their story. We need change, they shout. We need freedom and justice. They all have this in common. Set up with decades of corruption, repression, and poverty.
ABC's Lama Hassan in Cairo. Pentagon leaders preparing for a new culture of gays serving openly in the military are serving notice that discrimination will not be tolerated. Defense Secretary Gates outlined the policy in a staff memorandum with plans to start training the staff next month. Police in Detroit have released a dramatic surveillance tape of a precinct shooting last Sunday. A gunman opened fire on the station house, wounding four officers before police shot him dead. The governor of California has another plan to cut costs that's getting attention far away from the Golden State.
First, Governor Jerry Brown ordered half of the state workers here to turn in their government-paid cell phones. Now he's doing the same to government-owned cars and trucks. He wants to cut the number of vehicles owned by California and used by state workers in half. The state owns about 11,000 passenger cars. He says it will not affect vehicles used for health and public safety. Alex Stone, ABC News, Los Angeles.
You probably knew exactly where you were 25 years ago today when you learned that the Space Shuttle Challenger had exploded. Today, NASA remembered the seven astronauts who were killed on that day. No 12,000 close for the Dow. It dropped and lost 166 points for the week. This is ABC News.
Everybody knows that Acura cars and SUVs have a reputation for quality, reliability, and exceptional engineering. That's why buying a certified pre-owned Acura is such an easy decision. And it's even easier during the Engineer to Last sales event. Right now, you'll find exceptional savings on every certified pre-owned Acura, including 0.9% APR for well-qualified customers. Visit your local Acura dealer or Acura.com today. Offer ends January 31st, 2011. See dealer for details.
Jay Farner here at Quicken Loans. The rate today on a 15-year fixed mortgage is 4.25%, APR 4.49%. With a rate this low, you can afford to pay off your mortgage in half the time. And you'll be glad to know, J.D. Power & Associates ranked us highest in customer satisfaction in primary mortgage origination. So give Quicken Loans a call today at 866-QUICKEN or visit us online at quickenloans.com.
For J.D. Power & Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, nationwide mortgage licensing system number 3030.
Each day, kids are reported missing across our country. It's a tragic situation for all involved. If you can ever help authorities locate a missing child, call 1-800-THE-LOST. That was brought to you by Bombay Cafe, who also brings you a great selection of flavorful food served in a calm and colorful atmosphere that perks any appetite. You'll find the services family-pleasing, too, quick enough to keep the kids calm and gracious enough to give the evening a glow. Enjoy it all at Bombay Cafe at 3060 North Andrews Avenue in Wilton Manors.
Want to make the holidays even happier? Treat yourself to the ultimate gift from Honda. Right now is the perfect time to lease a Honda vehicle on your wish list. Come in today and see why Honda has the highest loyalty of any automotive brand. Or go to shophonda.com to build and price the present you really want now during Happy Honda Day.
Loyalty based on MY09 Polk statistics as of January 2010. Honda had the greatest percentage of households return to another new Honda vehicle.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy. Photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
Hi, Mrs. Miller. I have the cookies ordered.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, you have 5 boxes of Snacker Bubbles, 3 Little Yummers, and your total is $0.
You mean they're free?
Yep, they're free.
Well, it's a pleasure doing business with you.
Free is better. Do your simple federal return for free at TurboTax.com. It's free to prepare, free to print, and free to e-file. No wonder TurboTax is the most trusted brand of tax software in America. Visit TurboTax.com today. Trusted brand claim based on Intuit Commission Survey, August 2010.
The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of its host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors. Good afternoon, and welcome to Defending Your Money with your host, Dan Ascani of Ascani Wealth Management. Ascani Wealth Management is located in the Golden Bear Plaza in North Palm Beach. Give Dan a call at 877-578-5788. That's toll-free, 877-578-5788. Or check out the website at www.ascaniwm.com. Dan Ascani is a registered investment advisor representative of Kovac Advisors and is a registered representative of Kovac Securities. Dan can help you with money management, security brokerage services, financial services including financial planning, preservation, estate protection, and much, much more. Over the next hour, Dan will share his wisdom on all these subjects. Now, here's the host of Defending Your Money, Dan Ascani.
Welcome back to the Defending Your Money show, and this show is all about you as the consumer, the investor, and or the business defending, building, and preserving your wealth in this tough economy, which may have just gotten tougher. Well, let's go over that. We have a lot to talk about today, the biggest down day in the stock market since November, and that is on worries over what looks like multiple revolutions going on in other parts of the globe. Revolution may be a heavy word right now, but that's what it was in Tunisia. That's what it looks like in Egypt. And that's what, I don't know if it's going to happen in Yemen, but the protests there, they've gone violent in those three countries. Today, Egypt just going completely topsy-turvy. And that has the markets worried for several reasons. One, well, there's a revolution and a key Arab-U.S. ally going on. But two, there's a question over what's going to happen to the Suez Canal here, whether they're going to have to close it, or and that's going to interrupt trade, or oil flows, and that's going to get interesting if that actually happens. Of course, right now those are just worries, but it was enough to send crude oil through the roof, up 4.5% today on Friday, and exchange-traded funds like the OIH, that's an exchange-traded fund linked to the performance of crude oil at a 52-week high. Meanwhile, the stock market got hammered, even though gross domestic product came out at a higher rate than previous quarters, 3.2%, a little less than expected, though. The stocks hammered Dow down 166, and then when you look down further at the damage internally, and that's been the key to the market recently. We've been going over that on this show. The key has been the internal weakness in the market masking the Dow's move to new highs recently. Dow down 1.4% Friday. Transportation's down pretty hard, 2.7%. Same with the Russell 2000. That's the broad index of small-cap stocks, a benchmark for small-cap stocks, down 2.5%. The NASDAQ 100 down sharply, 2.5%. NASDAQ Composite and so forth. And that looks like it's on expanding volume here. We're going to talk about these things as we go through the show, because on this show, one of the ways we get clues on what's going to happen in the markets or what may happen in the markets is that we drill down below the surface layer of news and information. That's where the clues are, below the surface layer. The surface layer being perhaps what you hear on the financial news or the evening news or read in the financial papers. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just surface layer news. The Dow was down 1.3%. Gross domestic product was up 3.2%, et cetera. But what's going on below the surface usually contains clues, and that's why we love to examine that on this show, below the surface, and why we use quantitative models, those are mathematical models that pull information from the market and give us a set of numbers. Much like, as I always say, a physician for your annual physical orders blood work. And you go to the lab and he gets a bunch of numbers from the lab. Those numbers are straight out of your body. And the physician, well, it means something to him or her. And that's the same way with the market here. The numbers we pull from the market in our models mean something to us. And one of the things we were looking at here and examining on this week's Defending Money show is the potential for the beginning of a market correction here. And one of the reasons we were citing was that the internal market was not really participating with the Dow's recent new two-year-plus post-crash recovery highs, the Dow hitting recently 12,000, the S&P touching 1,300 for the first time since 2008, about mid-2008. The broad market internally just didn't seem to be participating. For example, many averages peaked in mid-January, and this week's move to a new high in the Dow was not accompanied by key averages like the Dow Transportation Average, which set a lower high and then plunged today, and like the Russell 2000 Index, which also set a lower high from its mid-January high and plunged today about 2.5%. Now, that's not the end of the world, but that's how these corrections start. It starts with a rally in the market that had been broad-based and on decent volume. It starts with the rally narrowing, with volume contracting, less and less buying interest the higher the market goes, and less stocks participate in new highs. For example, when the Dow reached 12,000 yesterday, and those averages I just cited didn't, and there are many stocks that didn't also, the rallies, that's a symptom that the rally's narrowing. So when you go up on less volume, that means there's less conviction to the rally, there's less stocks participating. It's a clue. It's a below-the-surface layer clue that the market may be ready for a correction. And a correction is not a bad thing. I really actually wish the market would correct, well, I want to say more frequently. What I really mean is I wish the market, if it were up to me, would not stage these multi-week or multi-month advances with hardly a down move, maybe just a couple of days down, then it's back up again. The deepest correction since the August low, for example, in many averages was not even 5%, maybe it was 3 or 4%. Back in the 80s and part of the 90s, we would see the market correct, maybe more often, but at least correct, back and fill, relieve itself of the excesses that developed in the rally. And the reason it needs to do that, the reason the healthy market needs to do that, is because when the market goes up and up and up and there's hardly a correction, people not only become complacent, or at least that's the general tendency for most people, it's human nature, they not only become complacent, but they also start participating in the greater fool theory, and that is where you're see the market going up, or you see the stocks, the stock market going up, you hear from your friends or colleagues that they're making a killing in this or that stock, and so the greater fool theory applies. That means you buy high, basically out of greed, not out of fundamentals, out of greed, because you just want to make money. You buy high and you hope somebody comes in and bids that stock or mutual fund, whatever it is, higher than you bought it. That's the greater fool theory. A greater fool comes in and buys it up. That's the theory anyway. That doesn't tend to happen as much when the market corrects along the way, because the corrections keep people from thinking that this is easy. It keeps people from thinking that the market's going up and up and up, and it doesn't really correct anymore. I've actually heard some people ask me recently, are you really expecting a correction? As if the market's not going to correct anymore, as if they've repealed corrections. Oh, yes, I expect a correction, and I expect another move up, and that's just the way the market ebbs and flows, backs and fills, and this one hasn't done that too much. Not only since the August low, where the deepest correction was maybe 3 or 4%, and then the rally started to really narrow out in December, and especially this month, but also since the 91% advance in the S&P 500 index from the March 2009 crash low has occurred without much of a deep correction. Now, we did have that volatility over the summer, the S&P, I think, from high to low, the April high of 2010 to the correction low in late summer. I believe that was about 16%. Not a bad one. And then the market went to a new recovery high. At least that was some backing and filling. But when you look at the overall scheme of things, you had too much of a move up in 2006 and 2007, perhaps even 2005, without a 10% S&P correction, and the market crashed. And it went straight down. And then it Well, arguably went almost straight up, 91% back up. The bottom line, without spending too much more time on this topic, this opinion of mine, the market is better off backing and filling, cleaning out the excesses, but yet trending upward. So we're in for a correction here. It already started, actually, in many stocks right after the election. Remember that sharp two-week November drop right after the election? Then the averages recovered and went to new recovery highs above the November high, but many stocks didn't. And now all the market appears to have needed was a catalyst. First of all, it's overbought. Second of all, volume has been low. But third of all, you get the revolution in Tunisia and then the protests in Egypt that go on for 4 days and turn into a violent clash to the point at which we're looking at Egypt again, asking if this is another revolution, if this is another time when the military is not loyal to the administration, in this case Mubarak. In the prior case before Mubarak, it was Sadat. The military was not loyal to Sadat. And there are reports right now, of course, we can't confirm them. This is all very fluid, and I think people are still trying to figure out what's going on over there. Reports that the military is allying more with the people in the streets than the Mubarak government. We'll see. But those are the things that cause people not only to worry, but when you think about one of the things that the people of Egypt appear to be upset about, and that is soaring food prices. They can't make ends meet over there. Food prices are up, I don't have the number in front of me, but some incredible amount every year, especially the last year. They can't make ends meet. They don't think the Mubarak administration has made the progress perhaps it should have been, it should have made, and you get riots in the streets. And it's the inflation, the higher prices of food and agriculture, that's what upsets people when they can't buy food or when they can't make ends meet. And then you end up with a potentially global geopolitical situation. By global, I mean that not every country is going to stage a revolution right now, but people are worried about whether the Suez Canal is going to get closed off or what's going to happen to the oil routes, whether global trade over there is going to be disrupted. And you get the excuse for a sell-off in stocks. So today, sharp sell-off, but that's just one asset class. Remember, we talk about diversification a lot on this show, the three primary asset classes: stocks, bonds, and hard assets. Said another way, equities, that's a hard asset. That's an asset class that represents equity ownership in a company. Second asset class, debt instruments, a fixed income that represents debt, lending money to somebody, a corporation or the government. A far different asset class than equities. And hard assets, a third one, far different than debt and far different than equity ownership. They're hard assets. They're commodities, gold, silver, real estate. Three different primary asset classes. And in today's day and age, there are securities, exchange-traded funds, for example, that make it pretty easy to diversify a portfolio with holdings in those three asset classes, and it makes it pretty easy to shift your emphasis when you need to. For example, the market falling today, maybe you want to reduce the risk. If you have a portfolio full of 200 stocks, you have to categorize them, take an x-ray of them, find out which ones are related, and do all that to reduce the exposure in risky categories, risky sectors, and hold others, like energy doing well today. You got to do a lot of work with 200 stocks, for example, but with exchange-traded funds that hold dozens or sometimes even a couple hundred or more stocks, the exchange-traded funds make it easier, in my view, and in perhaps in the view of many people. And since they can also hold gold and silver, crude oil, or be linked to the performance of commodities, exchange-traded funds, which trade all day long on the exchange, make it fairly easy to shift your emphasis, reallocate your portfolio, and even emphasize some areas doing well. So stocks were down today, but the other two primary asset classes were up. Gold up $22 an ounce, silver up $1.06. That's 4%. Recently, the metals were in a correction. Treasury bonds are up, as is the case a lot of times when stocks fall, and there's worry over perhaps a disruption of international trade or a slowdown in the economies of the world. Remember, recently, the United Kingdom, this week, reported a drop in gross domestic product. Surprised everybody, minus a half percent. Again, not the end of the world, but it showed that some of the European countries and the United Kingdom may be weaker with respect to their economies than originally thought. And then when you get a catalyst, a geopolitical catalyst that could disrupt international trade, and people start looking at the market thinking, you know, this thing hasn't had a correction in a while, maybe it's time to do some selling, and that's what you get. Gold, though, up $22 an ounce, silver $1.06, crude oil up $3.70, that's over 4%, big move up in energy and precious metals, of course, over that geopolitical turmoil. Gold was already in a bull market and maybe still is, I think it is, and just staged about $130 an ounce correction the last few weeks. It was ripe to perhaps bottom and go in the opposite direction. And those gold stocks I was telling you about the other day, when we're looking at which sectors might do well when the general market corrects, gold stocks doing very well again today. They were up sharply a couple days ago, down in some cases sharply yesterday, a little bit of volatility there, then up sharply today. Not all gold stocks and not all commodity-related stocks. Freeport-McMoRan, for example, down 1.3%. It's that copper play there that has people worried, perhaps. And Newmont Mining was down 0.2%. So was Yamana Gold. The rest of the gold stocks were up, or many of the rest, including some of the silver producers. Hecla Mining, Silver Wheaton, up 5% or more. So that sector, mining shares doing well, energy doing well. When you look at the rest of the sectors, though, we have a lot of damage, especially in country ETFs. Those are exchange-traded funds that are linked to the performance of individual countries or regions of the globe. And you can imagine, with people worried about overbought stock markets and geopolitical turmoil, that the country ETFs linked to the performance of various countries in Europe, Asia, Hong Kong, et cetera, were down fairly sharply today. Actually, many of them down 2.5 to 3, in some cases almost 3.5%. Country ETFs taking a hit there. And then when you look at some of the other ETFs, these are linked to the performance of various sectors. They were down of varying degrees. And some were up. Some were up, mostly energy and precious metals related. And the DBC ETF, that symbol is DBC. That's the benchmark ETF for commodity participation. The PowerShares Deutsche Bank Commodity Index Tracking Fund up 1.25%. And then, of course, the inverse funds, the kind of funds that move in the opposite direction of the stock market, something you don't want to try at home. Leave it to your professional, your advisor. Inverse funds, of course, moving in the opposite direction of the stock market would naturally have been up today, as they were down when the stock market was up. And that's the breakdown of the various sectors here. That is the snapshot of today's market coming into a Friday after the fourth day of riots in Egypt and worry over a potential revolution there and disruption of trade in the Suez Canal, possibly, and whether that will spread to other countries. There are reports that I can't confirm, but you'll see them in news reports, and maybe you already have seen them, reports that these riots in Egypt tapped off of the successful revolution in Tunisia, which started out as protests, unrest, riots, and then revolution. Pretty soon they've overthrown the government. I think they have the same idea in Yemen, same idea in Egypt, and who knows how many other places. But the grassroots, the citizens, are revolting. I think they're tired of oppression and they're tired of a lot of things, and so there is geopolitical risk now, and that's something the market worries about too, despite the underlying good news in the economy. There has been good news recently. It's not the gross domestic product and the country's expansion in its economy. It's goods and services that it produces. It's not that that's setting the world on fire. That number released today, of course, plus 3.2% for last quarter in GDP. It's not that that's setting the world on fire. It's what's happening inside the economy here, the loosening up of bank lending, for example. The Small Business Administration lending are seemingly more receptive to lending to small businesses. The commercial lending, the loosening up of real estate, commercial real estate, REIT companies. And we've had some of those experts on this show talking about this, well, this good news in the economy. But nonetheless, the market had discounted that. Remember, the market is a discounting mechanism. It looks into the future 3, 6, 9 months, depending on who you talk to, sometimes 12. The market naturally looks into the future. It's not trading off of what's happening today, although news can affect it. The market crashed in 2008 in front of the worst contraction in gross domestic product in decades. And then it bottomed in March 2009 and rebounded while the economy was just in horrible shape. But nonetheless, the market was bottoming when there was blood in the streets in the economy. And gross domestic product was contracting at an unbelievable 6%+ per quarter. The stock market bottoms out of the blue. That's because it was looking forward 6 to 9 or more months at the recovery. So now what's the market doing? Here we are, just fresh off the Dow's highest level in about 2.5 years since the crash, 12,000 on the Dow yesterday. What about now? Is the market going to look forward to any kind of contraction or risks, even if geopolitical and not economic? The geopolitical risks can translate to slowing economies because of the effects of a geopolitical issue. Is the market looking ahead now to those potential developments and the end of the Fed's quantitative easing, round two, easy money, pedal to the metal policies, which the Fed announced the day after the election in November and hinted at last September. And then I believe it clarified that the Fed would pretty much engage in those policies into June of 2011. Well, now it's almost February. Well, not too far from June, if the market looks ahead 6 months or so or more, it's looking past the end of quantitative easing too. It's looking at the geopolitical risk. It's looking at the slowing European economy, mostly due to sovereign debt problems. And actually, there was some unrest in the United Kingdom recently. And don't forget about the riots in Greece. This is perhaps an unwelcome trend if you don't like riots. Nonetheless, represents geopolitical risk. So what do you do with all this? Well, if you've heard me on the show, Defending Your Money Show, I'm Dan Ascani. I've been a licensed professional in this industry for 28 years, and we specialize in full-service wealth management, discretionary account management as advisors for a fee basis, and also securities brokers. For Ascani Wealth Management, we use Fidelity for clearing and TD Ameritrade and Pershing, so we don't clear any trades. We don't hold your money. It goes straight to Fidelity. You just put us on your account as your manager or establish a financial planning or consulting agreement with us, and we'll help you. We'll be part of your investment input. Give me a call, 877-578-5788, toll-free. That's 877-578-5788, toll-free, or go to defendingyourmoney.com. This is Dan Ascani. We'll see you Monday.
Thanks for listening to Defending Your Money with your host, Dan Ascani of Ascani Wealth Management, located in the Golden Bear Plaza in North Palm Beach. Now it's time for you to take action. Give Dan a call and set up your free consultation, 877-578-5788. That's toll free, 877-578-5788. Or check out the website at www.ascaniwm.com. That's A-S-C-A-N-I-W-M.com. and join us every day at this same time for Defending Your Money with your host, Dan Ascani, on AM 740 WSTR, South Florida's Money Talk Radio.
The opinions expressed in this sponsored program is strictly related to health, safety, and always not necessarily those of the description of death and medical